Good morning. Thank you. Happy New Year. Emotion, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it has to be unanimous. So, no, it's three will do. Yeah.
Good morning, Happy New Year. It is Wednesday, January 6th, 2010. It's 9:30. This is the first session of the Portland City Council of the new year. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Our first order of business is to entertain a motion on a new president of the council.
I move that Commissioner Fish be president of the council for the next 6 months.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that Commissioner Fish be the president of the council for the next 6 months. He's already got the sign in front of him.
Yeah, he's already got the sign over there.
Feeling confident. Is there any discussion of this motion? Does anyone wish to testify on this matter? Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Congratulations. You're the president. We have five folks signed up under communications. Carla, can you please read the title for communications item number one?
Request of Randy Toole to address council regarding tenant rights and housing.
Mr. Toole?
He may not have been able to make it today.
All right. Can you please read the title for council communications item number two?
Request of John Blair to address council regarding tenant rights and housing.
Mr. Blair. All right. Can you please?
Anthony and I are here, but she's.
We still have to go through it, Lou. Thank you. Can you please read the title for council communications item number three?
Request of Greg Harrison to address council regarding tenant rights and housing.
I assume that Mr. Blair is not here. Mr. Harrison is not here. All right. Can you please read the title for council communications item number four?
Request of Anthony Daniel Anderson to address council regarding tenant rights and housing.
Mr. Damson, welcome back to the city council. Glad you're here. Please sit down, and you just give your first and last name, and that clock in front of you will help you count down your 3 minutes.
My name is Anthony Daniel Anderson, and I'm here, first of all, to ask you to imagine that you're part of your daily routine, say a bus stop, and a man comes up to you and says that he's an overwhelming thoughts of oral sex with you. And then he requests, or actually demands, that you orient your body perpendicular or away from facing him, because the sight of your crotch is too much for him to bear.
Is this going somewhere?
Please indulge me. This actually did happen to me because an employee of Central City Concern, Greg Green, while I was at the phone, would come up to the drinking fountain and would say exactly that. He said that when he bent down to take a drink, that he thought of fellatio and that he wanted me to orient my crotch away from him. Well, first of all, I was, of course, surprised at the explicitness of his comments. I'm on the phone talking to my mother, and so I complied. You know, I just rotated my body. But the thing is, he kept on coming back. you know, this is a regular thing for me to call my mother. Every so often I would be down there, and sometimes I'd be facing away, so there would be no problem. He'd take his drink and go on. But other times, he would, again, repeat the same procedure. He'd say, oh, your crotch is bothering me. Anyway, so finally I refused, and he got upset, and he said he was going to report it. I said, well, hey, sure, report it. I thought he was crazy. He was loony. Anyway, he did report it. Rachel Livernoy, his immediate supervisor, she took the took his statement, and she was shocked, of course, of what he wrote. Anyway, she asked me to file a report. I did file a report. Eventually, it went to a meeting with the head of human resources, and they did. They found out that exactly what I said was true, that Greg was doing this thing. Anyway, about 2 months later, I hear that Ed Blackburn says that nothing happened. So I go back to Rachel, and I say, what's happening? I mean, I thought you said that this happened. And she did. She said, yeah, it did happen. And so I don't know what Ed Blackburn was thinking. I was told that that I made it all up. I'm sorry, I'm losing my composure because my time's up. I guess that's it.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. Carla, can you please read the item number 5?
Request of Lou Church to address council regarding tenant rights and housing.
Welcome back, Lou.
Morning. I'm Lou with PSU Progressive Student Union and Tenant Rights Project. I want to thank Anthony for coming a second time to City Council. Anthony was describing one of the incidents that Tenant Rights Project has promoted and organized around in terms of mismanagement by Central City Concern of low-income housing in downtown Portland. I want to talk about a couple organizers, Joe Pierce and Jason Barber, and try to address the issue of bureaucracy and budgets in terms of landlord-tenant relations vis-a-vis the infamous downtown so-called nonprofit, Central City Unconcerned. In terms of Joe Pierce, Joe is someone who talked, I think, a couple months ago to City Council. He was one of our best tenant rights organizers. Joe died in December 2009. He had a history of poor health, and he used a walker. Joe attended about 50 meetings in 2009 of Tenant Rights Project. Joe and I were able to talk with Andy Miller, the Deputy Housing Bureau Manager, about tenant rights issues vis-a-vis Central City. Joe was also a lifelong Republican who voted in 2008 for the first time for a Democratic president, Barack Obama. However, Joe was never able to attend a meeting with Nick Fish, supposedly the city's housing commissioner, despite requests, 5 requests, to meet with Nick with Tenant Rights Project. Likewise, Joe was never able to attend a Central City board meeting because those meetings are closed to tenants. There is a community service tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., January 7th, in the Biltmore lobby for Joe. And we want to invite Dean Giswold, the president of the board of CCC, Ed Blackburn, the CEO of Central City, and Nick Fish to that, since they weren't able to meet Joe in life, to at least meet him in death. In terms of Jason Barber, Jason's someone who is one of our organizers, who's filed a run against Nick Fish in the May 2010 election. We urge workers, tenants, people interested in accountability and transparency to vote for Jason Barber, B-A-R-B-O-U-R, for City Council in the election in May. In terms of budgets and bureaucracy within the 3-minute time constraint, Central City has approximately $33 million in their annual budget as a landlord. They also administer a number of other projects. In terms of special categories of additional funding, approximately Central City has roughly $80 million available. We recently received a 10-page packet from Nick Fish and Ed Blackburn, basically stonewalling, basically, again, not agreeing to an in-person meeting with Nick, which we request again, or allowing tenants to attend Central City board meetings. The board meetings are not open to tenants. Tenants, therefore, aren't allowed to speak at Central City board meetings, and the board minutes are secret. These things need to change.
Thank you for your testimony, Lou. That gets us to the consent agenda. Does anyone want to pull an item from the consent agenda? Carla, can you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance time certain, item number 6?
Amend the zoning code to allow a limited amount of office use at PGE Park.
All righty. Carla, you're going to walk us through what we're looking at here?
Yes, and I think I can do it in about 4 or 5 minutes. My name is Carl Lyle. I'm with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I'm a city planner. I also have some backup here behind me in case we need them from the Bureau of Development Services, Douglas Hardy and Kara Fioravanti, and City Attorney Reese, maybe up in the rafters somewhere in case we need her, and hopefully Dave Logston from the Office of Management and Finance if we have questions for him. With that said, there are a whole lot of different pieces about the Major League Soccer proposal for PGE Park. This is one tiny piece. The reason that we've brought these other people in case we need them is that they all have other small pieces to this pretty complicated large deal. So this is the small piece that the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability is in charge of, and it involves a zoning code amendment that would allow up to 15,000 square feet of non-accessory office use at the PGE Park site, which is currently not allowed under zoning. The intent of the proposed amendment is to allow a medical sports medicine training clinic to be built within that facility and to have that be both open to the users of the facility but also have the option of making it available to the public. And that's what makes it a non-accessory use. So the background is that the current zoning of PGE Park is an open space, so it's the OS, open space zone. That base zone is predominantly intended for parks and natural areas. So as you can imagine, it's actually a fairly difficult base zone in which to operate a large commercial stadium. The other major event kind of facilities that we have in the central city like that might be similar, like the Rose Garden and Memorial Coliseum, are in commercial zones. So it's a pretty different situation. It's pretty unique to PGE Park. Because it's in the base zone of open space, its primary uses, setting aside the office question for a second, of commercial outdoor recreation and major event entertainment are also not allowed there. So because of this, there's a whole special section within the zoning code that was set up about 10 years ago with the last remodel of PGE Park to speak to the unique conditions at that site and to allow its primary functions to continue to happen there. So that's zoning code section 33510115, which allows those primary uses of major event entertainment and commercial outdoor recreation to happen at the PGE Park site. There is a map in the zoning code which calls out that site, and so this section of the zoning code only applies to PGE Park and allows those uses to happen there. So the proposal that we've come up with, and we've taken through a standard legislative process, public meetings, hearings, notification, and recommendation from the Planning Commission, is to add a clause to that specific section of zoning code that speaks only to PGE Park to allow up to 15,000 square feet of non-accessory office use at the site, provided a series of conditions are met, and those include a council-adopted good neighbor agreement, council-adopted comprehensive transportation management plan, operating agreements, and other things. So If I didn't say it before, the office use, the medical clinic facility is deemed an office use, so that's why we're pursuing this office designation. So concerns that we've heard throughout the process, really, frankly, there haven't been a whole lot. It's not been a very controversial proposal. The size of the facility is fairly small. The fact is that it could actually be built within the park and just only serve the teams within the park today. Really, what this would allow is for it to also be open to other users when there aren't games happening. So the neighborhood, we did have a neighborhood meeting. The response was predominantly positive. There were some concerns to make sure that we didn't erode the open space zone generally, but because we're being very specific about only this site, I think that that's covered. There were some concerns that the neighborhood have an opportunity to comment and know about future possible changes to the use of that facility. Suppose down the road it's not a medical facility anymore and somebody proposes something else, the neighborhood would like to know about that. The good neighbor agreement that's required and will be coming to City Council, I believe, later this month for adoption is a perfect tool to speak to that process and what kind of notification would be required and what kind of public input would be required to future use changes to that facility. So,
and that requirement will also be in the operating agreement.
And it will also be in the operating agreement. There you go. So I wanted to mention the public record of the project is here. I also wanted to note again that it's just one very small piece. There's a design review process. There are conditional use reviews related to building on the Multnomah Athletic Club property. And then there's the good neighbor agreements and other pieces that will be coming to council as well. Planning Commission did not voice concerns. The neighborhood didn't either, other than the ones we just talked about. There are letters in your packet of support. Both there's a transmittal from the Planning Commission and a letter from the Goose Hollow Neighborhood Association saying that they're okay with this proposal.
I'd also like to point out that the notion of for-profit enterprises in, even if you were to describe this strictly as a park, is not unique to this endeavor either. Director Park has a restaurant in it. There's a kiosk down in the turnaround down in the John's Landing area. So those are two of others. This is not entirely unique.
Another example would be the commercial parking that occurs at O'Brien Square. Below grade. So those are examples of the other kinds of exceptions that are included in this zoning code section that speak to the unique characteristics of central city open space, open spaces, some of them. So
Harbor Drive, the park at Harbor Drive.
Okay. And then finally, just back to the good neighbor agreement briefly before I would ask that you take testimony and we clear up any questions. The good neighbor agreement is more than just a standard good neighbor agreement in this case because it's actually required by the zoning code. So in a sense, it's an extension of the regulations in the zoning code because it's not just an optional good neighbor agreement. It's a city council adopted good neighbor agreement that's required as an approval criteria for these uses at the site. The staff at Bureau of Development Services would be referring to the good neighbor agreement and going through it and trying to make sure that any kind of proposed uses were consistent with its intent for any future land use reviews. So
in that case, would it be enforceable?
Yes, and we can bring Bureau of Development Services folks up if there's more details about exactly how that would work.
So then this is a conditional use? The office use would be a use by right?
It would be a use by right, but what is currently proposed in the good neighbor agreement and in the operating agreement, which I haven't actually looked at, but it sounds like it's there.
We're still working on it.
Is that there are there'll be more language there about the review required for future uses and the types of office that could actually be allowed there. You can go as far as you want with it in those other tools in terms of the amount of review or restrictions on the use of that office space.
So why are we doing this today before we have the good neighbor agreement, before we have the development agreement, before we have those further restrictions?
Well, this is a first reading, so it's important. And as you know, it's been on the council for some time, and I've kept putting it off. I kept putting it off until I felt that we were making some useful headway on the negotiations on the operating agreement. And I feel like we're getting very close to that, and so airing this out as part of a first reading is the decision that I made to move forward.
I have a question. Can you tell me what's the difference between what we did on November 18th and what you're asking us to do now?
On November 18th, I think that you just postponed this item to later date.
Yeah,
I don't think you actually heard it.
Well, the ordinance before us says in paragraph 13, on November 18th, the City Council voted to adopt the changes in the zoning code amendment.
Right, because when we write these, so we have to assume that it's going to happen as originally scheduled. So when I filed this back in October, end of October, with the mayor's office, it was written that we were going on November 18th to council. What will happen with those dates, and I think is actually not too uncommon, is that we will amend them to reflect the actual dates of the hearings and the adoption. So that didn't happen. So that's a good catch.
Just trying to remember what we either did or didn't do. So that's sorry. Helpful.
So again, I've been putting off council consideration of this, airing this out, and this is the first reading of it today, until was satisfied that the negotiations on the operating agreement were moving into a productive zone. And I believe that they are. We're not at an agreement yet, but we're in the zone where an agreement looks possible. And Commissioner Leonard might have something to add. Or?
Nope.
Okay.
I just want to also clarify from the packet that we received, you have not had any objections to this request, is that correct?
There is a letter of opposition that should be in your packet that hopefully you have from
Mr.
Butler, I believe.
Mr. Butler?
Yeah.
Other than Mr. Butler, we have no other objections?
There's no formal testimony against other than Mr. Butler. There were earlier in the conversations with the neighborhood associations some cautions that we, you know, be careful about tinkering with the intent of the open space zone, and I think we've addressed those by making sure that it's specific to this one site that really is not a park or a natural area, essentially.
I've received several emails in opposition. So I have a question. Will the built area of the stadium need to be larger or higher because of this use?
I don't believe so. Again, you know, the details of exactly what the proposal looks like are going to be worked out in design review and with the Bureau of Development Services. But the schemes that I have seen, essentially all of the built area or the vast majority of this space that would be this clinic is below the street level. So you actually come in at street level and go down. Again, that could change in the design review process.
Thank you. And does the tenant lease from the city, or do they sublease from the lessee?
So this is a question for Dave Logston and the operating agreement and all that, but my understanding is the city would continue to be the owner of the facility. It would be managed by the entity called for in the operating agreement paragraph.
So, Mayor, would we have something in the development agreement giving us the right to say yes or no to whoever the tenant would be?
Yes.
Thank you. So I have another more plenary question, and that is in terms of the staff findings and that to do with the goals. As to the goal 5, open space, scenic and historic resources and natural resources, not really clear how this would comply with that, and also goal 8, recreational needs. I'm very concerned about the precedent here because of the lack of specificity on what kinds of retail office can be in this space.
Well, I mean, I think, let me just review here. This was a while ago that we wrote these, but I think one of the major things that's going on here is that it really isn't a typical park or a natural area. Frankly, the open space zone is not a great match for this facility. It's been a major event stadium since before we had the open space zone. At one point when we got a new zoning code, I believe in 1990-1991, the decision was made to apply this zone there. It was not made to apply the zone to Multnomah Coliseum, for example, which from a use perspective is very similar. So while it is in the open space zone, it doesn't really share the characteristics or the use history of the vast majority of the areas that are in open space zone. That said, one of the options that we looked at was, gosh, should this even be in an open space zone? Do we want to consider just changing it? We could go that route. It's a bigger process for sure. And at the end of the day, I think what we felt was no matter what base zone it's in, this is still going to be a pretty unique site, and it's going to require extra restrictions and extra approval criteria for anything to happen there because of the level of impact that it potentially has on the surrounding neighborhood. It's in it's in one urban neighborhood. It's adjacent to another. The impacts are significant there. There needs to be extra review for any kind of a use, regardless of the base zone. So essentially we've got, you know, all these extra things that apply there in the zoning code. You're going to have that regardless of the base zone. It seemed like the path of least resistance and to essentially just make a minor amendment to what we already have set up, which frankly has seemed to work for the last 10 years or so, from at least what I've heard from the neighborhood and the city's perspective.
So we're not setting a precedent?
I don't think so. I mean, we're being very specific to this site, and it is a really unique place. It's the only open space zone major stadium in the city. So it really is a unique place.
We also go back to the fact that we've got commercial enterprises in parks right now. So I'm not sure that this is, and that's either good or bad, but I don't think it sets a precedence as opposed to those are very limited and by various legal procedures, very constrained in what they can do with those for-profit enterprises in parks and open spaces. So we're trying to keep that restrictive but allowable use in what is zoned for parks and open space but is indeed a facility.
Right. On goal eight, you know, I might add, you know, what I think what we're trying to say there is we were asked by the mayor's office to look at ways to make this work, this medical clinic that could be serving the facility but also open to the public. And it, really the purpose of that was to make the stadium more successful in its sort of primary role. And so if they can achieve a higher quality medical facility by allowing it to both serve the teams there but also the public, that's kind of a win-win for meeting the longer-term recreational needs of the city and the region because you've got a stronger facility there. That was kind of what we were trying to say.
And this, like the rebound facility in the Rose Quarter, which
exactly
provides community service, and I'd be hoping to see in the development agreement.
Right, which would be allowed in PG Park but wouldn't be open to the public
I understand that. I want to make sure that, like rebound, that the potential for seeing patients pro bono and on the Oregon Health Plan is available to the nearby residents.
Since we're talking about
from a non sort of technical point of view, the reason why this makes sense to me and other folks, and granted reasonable people can disagree, is that big facilities like this are dark and empty for so many hours in the day by nature. And so having a reason for folks to be in that part of Portland during business hours, I think, is attractive to a lot of folks in the neighborhood, and it's attractive to me.
So it's envisioned that it would be open year-round?
Yeah.
So I have one more question about, and maybe it's for the development services staff, regarding enforcement of the Good Neighbor Agreement. Because I think the other place where we have reference to a Good Neighbor Agreement in the code is with convenience stores. And I believe there has been some concern that those Good Neighbor Agreements have not been found enforceable. I'm wondering whether we need more language in this zoning code section stating that the Good Neighbor Agreement must be in good standing or something like that.
Douglas?
In this particular case, because unlike retail stores, we're the owner of this property and we will have an operating agreement. I don't think they're analogous in terms of the situation, but...
Douglas Hardy, Bureau of Development Services. I think Mayor Adams is correct there as well. Also, the difference between the Good Neighbor Agreements for community convenience stores is that the city is not a party to those agreements, whereas the Good Neighbor Agreement for PG Park, it has to be adopted by council. So, in effect, council is party to that Good Neighbor Agreement. And we have received, at least through land use reviews, advice from city attorney, at least for Good Neighbor Agreements and other type of land use reviews, that unless the city is a party to that agreement, it's difficult for us, the city, to enforce that agreement.
In this particular case, we also have almost 10 years of Good Neighbor Agreements with this facility in partnership with the neighborhood, and by, you know, nothing has been, I don't think anyone would claim that the Good Neighbor Agreement process has been perfect. It has been very constructive, and both sides have experience. The facility operators on the ground, which some have been there through all the different ownerships, and John Bradley and the folks in Northwest, and Jerry Powell with Goose Hollow. We're very lucky and in this particular situation that the actual people who are on the ground responsible for working through the issues over time on the Good Neighbor Agreement are in place and have been in place for a number of years.
Yes. Thank you.
Question. Well, maybe this isn't really a question, but I guess it is something I wanted to raise. I think Commissioner Fritz just alluded to this. I would definitely want to make a condition of the lease with the health provider that all participating physicians must serve patients on Medicare or the Oregon Health Plan or Medicaid. And so to the extent that needs to be telegraphed, I'm telegraphing it right now.
Perfectly appropriate. I don't think that's appropriate in our zoning code, but it definitely
needs
to be.
Not appropriate here, but in the sense that we will be approving the lease, that will be one condition I will be seeking in the lease.
Very fair.
So I was just going to add one more thing since we were talking about the findings and the mayor answered or raised the issue of it being a dark kind of a facility where really not much of anything is happening most of the time. The very last finding, it's number 49 on Goose Hollow and the Goose Hollow Stationary Community Plan from 1995, I believe, actually spoke to that issue quite a bit and called for an eventual future where Southwest 18th Avenue kind of becomes more of a main street for that neighborhood. That's obviously really difficult with the fence of the stadium, which is nothing is happening most of the time. So they actually pretty specifically called for in that policy document more mixed-use projects along Southwest 18th, more activation of the blank walls of the stadium. So actually, I think this is pretty consistent with that.
So. Additional council discussion. We have four people signed up to testify. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Carla, please call the first three.
First three, please come on up, are Ivan Kafori, Hal Saltzman, and Stan Bozich.
All three come up, please. Come on up.
Ivan, Hal, and Stan.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. You just need to give us your first and last name, and that clock in front of you will count down your 3 minutes. Go ahead, Ivan.
Thank you, Mayor. My name is Ivan. Ivan Kafori. I'm a past president of the Active Multimers Baseball Players Association, along with the other gentlemen that are behind me. And my concern is with the remodeling of PGE Park. You're going to force out baseball. Now, I don't have any problem with remodeling the ballpark, except that I don't feel that the city should take second position to the soccer league. And the soccer league should not be dictating to us that nobody else can play in our stadium that is owned by the city of Portland. And Portland's put a hell of a lot of money into that stadium, but it's going to put a lot more into it with this remodeling program. I only want to suggest that because the alternatives for other sites seem to be dwindling down to a precious few, the new Vancouver mayor just stated that he doesn't see any possibility of putting the stadium in Vancouver because they don't have enough time, according to Mayor Paulson's suggestions. The park over at Dillon's Park was a bad choice. Beaverton was a terrible choice. What would have made sense would be for the soccer team to go out to the Hillsborough Stadium, which could have been expanded and without relatively pain-free. And but now we've got Memorial Coliseum, which I think would be a great site. I don't see how the architects can have enough claim on the Memorial Coliseum that, we don't want it torn down because we don't know what we're going to do with it, but we want to have it there. I just want to see our PGE Park being a multi-use stadium, and I don't care what the MSL says. We should tell the MSL, if you want to put a team in Portland, it's going to be multi-use, at least for 2 or 3 years, until possibly we can find an alternative site to put the Portland Beavers. But I don't like the idea of rushing into something that's going to cost an awful lot of money. You're going to drive professional baseball out of town. It's been here for over 100 years. And once you lose a team and has no stadium, No one else, of course, will ever move back. We'll be without baseball 75 nights out of the year. There'll be 400,000 to 500,000 people looking for a baseball game to go to, and there's no place to go. I'd like for you gentlemen to consider that. Thank you.
Thank you. And just to clarify, when as someone who pushed the Rose Quarter site for a potential AAA ballpark, after it became clear that the only way to get the stadium in there was to tear down the Memorial Coliseum, it was at least my opinion for my own vote on council, I did not support that.
I understand that.
Go ahead.
If I may respond, okay.
Stan Bozich, also a member of the active and old-timers of baseball association. I grew up in the shadow of the Vaughn Street some 79 years ago, where we participated around the park as clubhouse boys, bat boys, and so forth. So we're ingrained with the Portland Beavers. And we'd like to request, we might be a little bit too late. The horse has been stolen and the barn door has now been closed. But there's a possibility to have soccer and baseball coexist for give us maybe 4 or 5 years where we have the Beaver baseball and we have soccer at the same time in the stadium. That gives us 5 years to look for another site for the Portland Beavers. Plus, someday we're going to have Major League Baseball in Portland, and I hope it's in our lifetime where we can come out and watch a Major League ball game instead of going to Seattle. And that'll give us more time to look around where we could find a potential site, maybe out by Delta Park, the old Portland Meadows grounds there, which is very, very large. They want to build a Walmart on Hayden Island. If you can build a Walmart on Hayden Island, you could probably put a baseball park out along the Columbia River near Delta Park. A lot of space out there where it can be done. And with that time, we could have a AAA ballpark, retroactive or retrofitted, where someday maybe it could be expanded to a Major League Baseball park. So we might be a little bit late, but we're hoping your decision would help us out. Thank you.
And I just want to reassure you that in terms of sites, viable sites, sites that would make sense financially, I think at least two members of council, maybe more up here, have looked under every rock. And every site you've mentioned we looked at, and it's not viable. They're not viable for either lack of neighborhood support or we don't own the land. And AAA ball is a difficult financial deal anyway, but if you have to procure the land on top of all the other costs, it makes it hard to work. Mr. Saltzman.
Good morning. My name is Hal Saltzman. I'm a native of Portland. I grew up and went to Shattuck School, which is now part of Portland State. I went to Old Lincoln High School, which is also now Portland State. And I graduated University of Oregon, served 5 years in the Marine Corps. And I'm here because I love Portland, and I don't want to see Portland make a horrible mistake. And I believe that the mistake that you'd make would be pouring all this money because Major League Soccer says we can't have another sport on the same field. Now, what this means is you got about $25 million to pay off on the old bond. You put in $30 million, and then to build a new baseball stadium, you put in $50 million. That's a $100 million deal. Soccer is not worth it. I like soccer. My oldest son and I had big arguments on it, and I have to say I won out. Anyway, that's the position we're looking at, a $100 million deal. And there's so many needs in the city. The schools, are secondary in quality. I've been told that there's only two high schools that are first quality. That's Lincoln and Wilson. I don't know if that's true, but I know that most of the schools are having trouble. Stan was a coach at Roosevelt High School for 16 years and a teacher. And when he went there, there were, what, 1,800 students?
1,500.
1,500. But anyway, things have changed. Now they got out 600 or 700. These are things that I'd like to bring out to you. Instead of a $100 million expenditure because Major League Soccer says, you got to do it or you don't get it. Well, I think the city sometimes has to stand up for what the city believes in. And I certainly think that the city, and if you don't believe me, just talk around town. And if you said, would you spend $100 million to bring soccer here? And 99 out of 100 people would say, absolutely not. I can guarantee you that. Now, the idea, my wife, who is not much of a sports person, she asked me, well, how many nights would the soccer team take at the stadium? I said, somewhere between 16 and 18. And how many would baseball take? I said, 72 or 75. He said, well, I don't understand. You're talking about Portland population, and the attendance is so much greater in baseball and soccer. And there is a way in which soccer can coexist. I've been to many football games in the past where they had bleachers in left field. And they're new kind of bleachers that are easily movable, and they can coexist, and that's what we would like, because I just don't see where the city wants to make a big mistake and put some priority where some of the money should go.
So is your point that, and you did know Dan Saltzman when he was a child, right?
Pardon me?
You knew Dan Saltzman when he was a child, right?
I believe he's his nephew.
Yeah, I knew him when he was born.
Okay. One day we'll have to talk. Your point is we're spending too much money on soccer, but we should spend some of that money on baseball, and none of that money should go.
I just
want to make sure I understand your point.
No, Mr. Mayor, I'm not saying to spend more money on baseball instead of soccer. I'm saying coexist, and we don't have to spend $100 billion to bring in Major League Soccer.
Okay. Again, I encourage you to dig into the details. We're not spending $100 million on soccer, and we're not spending money that competes for funding with schools, which was also part of your presentation. I just wanted you to make sure that you knew that. The public record is open. I want to thank you all for your testimony this morning. Okay. Carla, we have one last person.
Wait, may I just add something, Your Honor? It isn't competing with money for schools. It's supplementing money for schools.
The argument that we shouldn't spend money on AAA ball, you're saying keep Major League Soccer here. The argument that we shouldn't spend money on AAA ball could be made with schools as well. So I'd encourage you to look at the details of what the council is considering, and I'd welcome your feedback on that. Carla?
He's decided not to speak.
Okay. Anyone else wish to testify on this matter? Item number 6 on the city council agenda.
I have one quick question that I forgot to ask earlier, sorry. Will additional parking be needed for the medical use?
Oh, you mean in the world or that we're providing?
That this use, if it were not in an open space zone, would probably be asking, is there going to be adequate parking? And I'm just wondering, are we going to be saying that we're going to need parking for this use?
We wouldn't require any parking for any use, essentially, in the central city anywhere, and it's at a light rail stop. So,
thank you very much.
All right, unless there is additional discussion on item number 6, it moves to a second reading. When are we scheduled to have the second reading? Carl,
is will next week be okay? Or do you want to put it out further?
Is it 2 weeks out, isn't it?
I still have you being gone on the 20th and the 20th,
okay,
which is 2 weeks.
All right. Then what about the week after? Yep.
The 27th, we have a morning session. Did you want to give it a time certain, or it's a second reading only?
Second reading only.
Okay, it'll be on the regular agenda the morning of the 27th.
So move forward.
Mayor, before you move to the next item, I'd just like to recognize Janice Adler, who's in the audience. She was appointed on the consent agenda to the Portland Utility Review Board, and I just wanted to thank you for serving.
Congratulations. All right, that gets us to the regular agenda. Can you please read the title for resolution? It's a resolution, item number 41.
Authorize Chief Administrative Officer or designee to execute a revocable permit of entry to allow Peregrine Sports, LLC, access to PGE Park to conduct non-constructive evaluation and preparation activities.
Ken.
Good morning, Mayor Adams and members of the City Council. For the record, I'm Ken Rust, the City's Chief Administrative Officer, and with me this morning is David Logsdon, the manager of the City's Spectator Facilities. The resolution before you authorizes the CAO, or my designee, to execute a revocable permit of entry with Peregrine LLC, allowing for certain non-construction, preparatory, and evaluation activities at PGE Park. Under current city code, OMF, as the city's property manager, has general authority to approve and execute permits of entry for city-owned property. However, given the larger scope of activities requested by Peregrine LLC in this instance, we thought it appropriate to ask council for specific authority to execute this permit of entry. The permit of entry authorized by this resolution will enable Peregrine LLC to maintain its planned schedule for improvements to PG Park, the first phase of which would commence in February, subject to approval of final documents by City Council. The current plan is to have these required documents completed and filed for first council reading on January 20th. The permit of entry authorized by this resolution expires on February 15th, 2010. If the City and Peregrine LLC do not reach final agreement on the planned PG Park renovations, the permit of entry requires that Peregrine LLC restore the property to the same or better condition that existed prior to the start of work authorized under this permit. And with that, I wouldn't have any questions.
When did you say the permit expires?
February 15th.
February 15th.
And if they didn't, if everything falls apart, would we have to sue to get them to repair it?
I wouldn't think so. That by contract and by them agreeing to the permit of entry, they're agreeing to those particular terms and conditions of their permit of entry. If they didn't, obviously, then we would use all of our authority under law to get them to execute what they've agreed to do.
And I have a concern about putting the cart before the horse. So I want to ask you if you intend to have something to us for first reading on January 20th, what would be the downside to us simply deferring on this until it can be considered in combination with the operating agreement?
It's my understanding that by delaying, by not approving the permit of entry or having it be coincident with the approval of the documents, it will delay the preparatory work necessary for them to maintain the schedule of construction to begin in February to allow the first phase of foundation improvements to be constructed prior to the start of baseball this year, and then allow the completion to begin in the fall. And so it does have the potential of jeopardizing that particular schedule, which we're all earnestly working towards. We believe that by approving this permit of entry, it would allow us to continue things as we're working on documents. We've been spending a tremendous amount of time on the documents, and I have to say that I think we've made a lot of progress on getting those documents ready for council consideration. And it is a bit of a balancing act. We're trying to work with Peregrine, our partner, and the council to be able to keep things moving on the schedule that we have right now.
Ken, it's not a comment on you or our lead negotiators, but the additional concern that I have is that as you know, on July of 24th, I joined with three other council colleagues to support the baseball-only option after having opposed three or four different iterations, either formally or informally.
Soccer only.
We had an October deadline for the expiration of the pre-development agreement, the timeline we were working on. I've been briefed a number of times on the status of negotiations, and frankly, every time I'm briefed, it seems like they keep multiplying. The issues in dispute keep multiplying. And as of yesterday, my staff was advised there are some 81 issues in dispute. And the concern that I have is that I want the leverage to remain on our side to get this deal done. And I have the greatest confidence in you and our negotiating team, as you know. But I don't frankly understand why almost 6 months later we don't have a deal. And while I understand the logic of now essentially declaring an emergency to move on some pre-development work, I guess I simply don't understand why this wasn't why a negotiation wasn't concluded months ago, so that we wouldn't be at this juncture giving someone a license to do some work in advance of finalizing an agreement.
I think that's more of a question for us to answer, and I would say because we've held firm on the direction provided to us by council, and we have refused to stray from the negotiating direction. We also are taking our time to look at the details and make sure that as many of the details as we can perfect are perfected. And so some items on the list, a lot of them are to make sure that not only the words on paper are clear, but obviously the intent behind them is clear as well. Commissioner Leonard, would you add anything to that?
Of course, I agree in negotiations to never give up leverage. I think this actually, instead of reduces our leverage, increases it. It puts the onus on Mayor Paulson if he's going to start spending money, and we have language that allows us to have him revert back to the condition prior to him spending money if he doesn't live up to it. So if anything, I would think he would be more nervous about this agreement than us until we have a final agreement. So I would disagree that this reduces leverage. Second, we are looking for a date of 2011 by which we will have Major League Soccer playing at the stadium for us to complete what needs to be done at the stadium by then, just mechanically. We have to allow them begin doing work, but we've done it in a way that I think not only protects us, but puts more pressure on the other side to agree to the terms that we've insisted on.
Other discussion from council? It's a good airing out of, I think.
I guess I had one other question, Ken, just as to the agreement. An indemnification means that if there's a problem, there's a party you can go after to get a remedy. But an indemnification with a bond gives you a different level of protection. Was there some consideration about having a bond married with the indemnification?
We certainly considered that, but we didn't think that given the scale and scope of the improvements or the work that's being undertaken, rather, that it was really necessary. We believe that the Peregrine LLC is certainly able to make good on the requirements of the permit of entry. And even in the worst-case scenario, if things have to be replaced back into the condition there, they are extremely incented to do that as well because there's a baseball season coming up that the park has to be used for, even subject to the approval of the documents. They're going to play baseball this year. So we think that we have the appropriate protection, that a bond doesn't necessarily provide us additional protection that we already have, and we have Peregrine extremely incented to, one, get the documents done, and in the worst case, restore the park if that's what we come to.
I just have one other question because I've had some people contact my office. Has any work been done prior to our consideration of this application?
We have granted, I believe, a permit of entry last month and that's probably some of the work that might have been seen at the park for some foundation testing work and things like that. Again, as I mentioned in my earlier comments, the OMF has the authority as the city's property manager to execute permits of entry. That particular activity was very narrow in scope, and we thought was certainly within the authority that city code grants OMF. The scope of these activities is broader, and we really felt that in this instance it would be more appropriate for the council to give OMF and myself in particular that particular direction. But that's probably what you may have received comment on, Commissioner.
How many people?
Yeah. One last question.
Sure.
I'm sorry if I missed this in your opening remarks. Did you comment on what are the scale and the nature of the improvements that they intend to do between now and?
We didn't talk about those specifically, but Dave Logsdon can give some.
I could cover those.
It's covered in the permit, in the resolution, and the attachment to it. It shows a list of the things that will be undertaken.
Why don't you just
air it out?
Yeah, just air
okay.
It out.
Okay. It started. The primary work deals with the preparation of the field surface for February foundation work, and that involves taking down the baseball fence, removing some of the advertising icons, removing some of the field turf and a warning track in the east and south sections of the park. They're going to do relocate an electronic transformer that needs to be relocated because the phase one work involves the realignment and regrading of the access road. There's, you know, lots of operational issues with that, and that needs to be done. And the final couple pieces are actually completion of some work that was a part of, was planned for in the 2001 renovation, but due to budget constraints were not implemented, and that involves completion of some restroom facilities on the main concourse and the addition of a new restroom facility that is at field level near where the Widmer concession area is. There isn't one there now. It was planned, but it was a budget reduction in 2001.
Whose budget reduction?
It would have been a joint decision by the city and PFE at that time to keep the project within the budget.
So let me see if I can summarize. This is moving forward. It's limited in nature. It's basically for a month and a half in terms of access. That's the sort of the legal parameters. The reason to get going on it is we have the reality of construction season and baseball season. They have to restore it, and beyond the legal requirements, they're incented to restore to the playable condition because they've got a whole year's worth of 75 games that won't happen without it, and they'll be losing lots of money. And we're bringing this forward at this time for those reasons, and also we're sort of in the realm of reaching agreement. We don't have agreement, but we've moved into the realm where the major issues have been, most of them have been resolved. In the end, it might all fall apart, but at least we're in sort of that phase where agreement is possible. Is that a fair summary?
Yes.
All right. Folks that want to testify? Thanks, gentlemen.
One person, Ian Todd.
Todd, welcome back to City Council.
Thank you, Your Honor. Council people.
I just wanted to touch on a couple of things, and some commissioners said them already. This the key phrases in this grant are restore to same or better. I read through it. That bathroom, regardless, if everything fell apart with Peregrine, there would still be improved bathroom facilities on the concourse and the field level bathroom, which if you've attended an event there and been in the Widmere area, it's a long trek. It is an improvement regardless. And it also means that Peregrine will now actually be spending real money, which does incentivize them to come to an agreement with the city so they're not throwing good money after bad. This means that they're actually inputting and making contracts with construction people and gives them even more incentive to come to an agreement with this council and move forward for 2011. I don't see a risk here with allowing them access to make some improvements that need to be done regardless, and they are required by this to restore the field and the fences and those things. And so worst-case scenario, wind up with the field the way it was, the transformer moved and improved, that access road regraded and made safer, and additional bathrooms. So I don't see the risk here to the taxpayers or the city, and I encourage you to move forward and allow Peregrine to move forward with this work. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. Carla, would you please call the roll on the resolution?
Fritz?
Well, I appreciate the presentation and the eloquence and persuasive arguments of Mayor Adams and Commissioner Leonard. Notwithstanding those persuasive arguments, it doesn't seem prudent to me to allow significant construction before a development agreement is signed. I'm concerned that taxpayers may not be protected and that we would have to sue. And if the process is stopped by a lawsuit or a referral, that the city could be at risk. No.
Fish.
I supported the July 23rd, 2009 council resolution because I think finally the soccer-only deal pencils out and shifts the costs of this deal both to the users and to Mr. Paulson's businesses and to Mr. Paulson individually. It was my understanding we'd have an operating agreement in a timely manner to evaluate to make sure that the deal that is structured is consistent with what council authorized. I have enormous regard for what Ken Rust and his team is doing and for our lead negotiating team and for the mayor and Commissioner Leonard on this. And I have complete trust in their ability to hammer out a deal. But we are approaching a six-month delay. And frankly, based on the fact that I was advised yesterday there's still some 81 issues in dispute, I have a concern, frankly, about the timing and the time that it's taken to conclude this. And I respectfully believe that we are giving up leverage if we go ahead with this. It strikes me that this is putting the cart before the horse. And I say that as someone that is looking forward to welcome Major League Soccer to Portland. So respectfully, I vote no.
Saltzman?
Well, I think this is a well-thought-out and strategic move for us to be taking at this point. I do think it is consistent with increasing our leverage. Peregrine is going to start putting in real dollars, and we'll get to an operating agreement. We've spent a lot of time on this issue, and I have full faith in our negotiating team, in the mayor and Commissioner Leonard, and in Merritt Paulson, that we're going to make this happen, And this step, I think, at the worst, will end up with additional restrooms in the stadium. So I think, and I know that's near and dear to Commissioner Leonard's heart.
Wait a second. There's not putting a loo there. These are
no restrooms.
Dear God.
No restrooms. No, I think this is a consistent. I think the operating agreement's taken longer than